your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. Always the message is, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org website. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on thegriefblog.com. Well, good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Mom.
You know, I was really interested. Our executive editor, Neil Chethick, was telling us that he actually had a woman call him the other day and say how much she was getting out of the shows and as well as the grief blog. I thought it was really great, didn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, we have an amazing community of authors and guests, and that's what makes us who we are. It's all those people out there that are supporting us.
And, of course, all you people who are listening to the show is what is making it all happen. And I loved what she told him. She said, he said, what do you really, you know, like most about it? And she said, you know, all the things that are going on, but I just feel better when I leave the site. And what a great thought to feel that we've helped somebody and they feel better when they leave the site, isn't it, Heidi?
Oh. Absolutely, definitely. I mean, it makes me feel better, and it makes me heal every day when I can help others.
Right. Well, you know, people are already anticipating the holidays. We're getting on our blog, we're getting comments about that they're concerned about, you know, getting through the holidays.
Yeah, and I think, as we've said so many times before, those days leading up to a holiday are oftentimes the most anxiety-provoking days, and sometimes the holiday itself is not as anxiety-provoking as the time leading up to it.
Absolutely, and one of the things we're going to be doing for you all is we send out requests to all of the people that are writing for the blog and also to any of you out there who have written poetry or articles or whatever. We're really going to try to have a very comprehensive site and supportive site for people during the holidays this year.
Right, and having authors write in about tips for the holidays, tips for getting through the holidays, and I've already received a couple of great articles that we're going to post, that we'll have Neil post in the next few days.
So you'll be seeing that kind of support on the site. And again, if you have things that you would like to put up on our site, please feel free to go to our site and hit up on the author site, and you can come and join us and be one of our authors also. I think it's writers. Write for us is what it says. Hit on write for us, and it'll give you information of how you can get your writings to us. Well, Heidi, we've got some great guests today, and I'm looking forward to them. We're going to be talking about serving others to honor our daughters, and we're also going to be talking about writing to heal the loss of a husband and child. Would you like to introduce our first guest, Heidi?
Sure, I'd be honored to. As you said, Mom, our topic today is serving others in honor of our daughters, and our guests are Marianne Dietzel and Linda Berg. Marianne Dietzel and Linda Berg lost their teenage daughters, Nina and Kristen, in a car accident in 1996. These mutual losses brought them through grief and gave them the desire to be of service to others suffering loss. Linda is the publisher of She Would Draw Flowers, a book of poetry by Kristen Berg. Welcome to the show, Marianne and Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great having you, Marianne and Linda. Now, best thing to do, Heidi and I have found when we have two guests and we're very excited about having you both on, is to have you identify yourself when you're going to log in. It kind of helps our listeners. So I wondered if one of you wanted to start and tell us, well, maybe Linda, because you were in the automobile accident where where Nina and Kristen were killed, weren't you?
Yes, I was in the car.
Could you talk a little bit about that for our audience?
Well, we hit black ice on a crisp November morning the day after Thanksgiving and slid into the lane of a 16-wheel truck.
And that was in 1996.
That was in 1996. And the two girls died instantly, and I survived, and I was airlifted to the hospital and had 14-hour surgery and was able to come through this. And the words that came to me over and over when I was in that hospital was loss. Love is greater than loss.
Wow.
It was like those words were coming through me.
And so, Marianne, how did you hear about Nina?
My husband got the first call at work. He came home. I had been out with my 4-year-old son, and my daughter was 18 at the time that she died. And I also have a son who's 2 years younger than Nina. So he was 15 at the time. I came home from doing some errands and found my husband at home, and he told us about the accident. And it happened in New York, actually. They were going to school out there. They were in 11th and 12th grade, and so our family flew out there where Linda was in the hospital.
Because I had gone out for Thanksgiving to be with my daughter.
And they were going to the Waldorf school there in New York, right?
Right, in rural New York.
Yeah. Where is it for our audience?
It's
2 hours north of New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which the Waldorf School will kind of fit into this, because I, what I know about the Waldorf School, that has something to do with the book that was written by Kirsten.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that later. But so getting to Marianne, you flew back to New York.
We flew to New York and first visited Linda, could barely communicate with her. Mm-hmm. Because of her state due to the accident and the surgery she had been through. But she was well aware of what had happened. And then we proceeded to the little town where these girls were embraced by a large community. Mm-hmm. And where there was already a tradition of caring for your own after someone has died. So a parent in the family had volunteered their living room. Another parent had volunteered to make a simple pine coffin. So we waited in this living room for the girls to come. The coffin had to dry first. The joints that he had glued had to dry. Then the funeral home brought the girls to this living room. And we were able to spend the next 3 days, my family and all of the mourners who came from that community and some relatives.
And all of the students in that class,
right,
were able, mm-hmm, to be present together and be together with supportive adults around this loss of their very, very dear friends.
Mm-hmm. So, Linda, you were in the hospital and kind of missed all this.
I was in the hospital and missed it. But after, I was like in meditation when they were having certain ceremonies, and then the students in the class all came to the hospital and came to see me and sang the songs that they had sung at the service, so that they embraced me so, you know, so warmly. And then I went back and spent time 6 months later with all of those students when I could return in a little bit better state.
And you had lost a husband, 3 years before this?
1 year.
Oh, only 1 year. Oh, my goodness.
1 year before, yes. So, and Kirsten had lost her dad, and that's in the poetry. You know, I felt like after she died, all the things she had written about her loss of her father somehow helped us with her loss.
Mm-hmm. Now let me see if I'm correct. Marianne, Nina is your only daughter?
Yes, I have two sons well.
And Linda, Kirsten is your only child?
She was my only child.
So you both lost your girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
So sorry to hear about that. So, Marianne, was your son, did he go, I think Heidi's always interested in the sibling thing, did he go and participate in all of this?
Yes. My 15-year-old son stayed there in the home where the girls were in their coffins in the living room for the 3 days with several other students, so that he had the support of these high school kids who he didn't really know, but they took him in right away. And they lived, you know, they could go out and be in the woods and just be together, and we stayed somewhere else and came. But he was really right there, and I think having that time in the 3 days after she died to be with her body really helped it become real to him.
Mm-hmm. Of course, and to be with all the friends talking about the girls together. I mean,
right.
It's amazing.
It didn't take it away and make it just something that everybody had to put inside of a box somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it truly changed the lives of these young people.
Well, and also oftentimes when we see an open casket, we are in a line and it's very quick. You view the body quickly and you have to move on. Because
this is
people
so
behind
different.
You. And they got to spend time really saying goodbye and being with the girls.
Yes, it helps so much. And then, you know, when that moment comes when the coffin has to be closed, you can feel like you're ready because
mm-hmm.
you've had that time physically to be present and say the goodbyes.
Okay, now, Linda, I want to ask you.
For me.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about this because one of the things that comes up a lot for us is the people who didn't see the body. I'm working with somebody right now whose son died overseas, and the husband went over and saw the body. The wife didn't, and I think she's feeling a bit gypped, frankly.
Yeah. Well, two things happened for me. One was, in this case, an artist who was a teacher of Kirsten's made a drawing of her and Nina in the casket, and it was brought to me a little bit later. It was very hard to see it, but it also actually was helpful. And then about a year and a half later, I had a series of dreams in which somehow my own soul said goodbye. And in these dreams, the final dream, I'm touching her back and open my eyes, and it's like I'm saying goodbye to her body. And I was so in shock, I didn't even realize I had not had an experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I was so into survival about just, you know, everything else that it didn't even strike me consciously until much later. But I think that anyway, people could even visualize,
mm-hmm.
you know, somehow going into an imagination and being able just to say goodbye in their souls. There may be ways that I got that through the dreams that might be helpful for people.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And I think that it's wonderful that you have the understanding, too, how difficult it is for that audience out there who didn't have the chance to see their loved one.
Yes.
So it's time.
I was so grateful other people could be there. I kind of kept sending the other people, go and be with her, you know.
Uh-huh.
And in a way, they became my proxy. You know?
And they could tell you about how she looked and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and they would tell me the stories. And I had a young girl who wrote to me every week for a year who was living in the home where the wake was. And every week she would write some little thing about Kirsten, either from that weekend or from her life. And so that helped heal me, too,
I think. That's great. Well, we're coming up on break now. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Please stay tuned to hear more about serving others in honor of our daughter with our guests, Mary Ann Bissell and Linda Berg. If you'd like to email us about this show or upcoming shows, you can reach Heidi and me through our blog, thegriefblog.com. These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation and are supported by the Compassionate Friends. Please stay on and listen for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today with Mary Ann Dietzel and Linda Berg about serving others in honor of our daughters. Welcome back to the show, Marianne, Linda, and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. It's nice to be back on the show. When we went to break, we were just talking about a home viewing of Nina and Kirsten and about Linda's being in the hospital and not able to see the bodies, but some of the ways that she coped with it, which I thought were very nice, and how you could cope with it maybe even a year later by talking to people about it, thinking about it, and also maybe talking to other people who did view the body if they did, if you have questions or thoughts. But I wanted to move on now to the ways that Mary Ann and Linda have gone on to honor their daughters and to do things for the community. I wanted to talk about beholdingthethreshold.org is their website, beholdingthethreshold.org. Who would like to take it, Marianne or Linda, to talk about the threshold?
Go ahead, Marianne.
All right. Because of our experience, this is Marianne, because of our experience with, because our families were friends before this all happened. So we were involved in Linda's first husband's dying, and then our girls died together, and her second husband actually died as well. And we did this home death care in all three of those instances and found it to be so fulfilling to have done it that way that people actually came to us asking for help, sometimes in times of loss, and then also to actually give a workshop on telling our stories so that people could learn from our experience on how you can experience death differently. And so that just kind of started us on doing this education about conscious dying, home death care, and staying connected to those you have lost, and being available to help families in our own community.
And you're in the Twin Cities area, right?
We are.
Now, Linda, can you talk a little bit about the threshold? What do you see as the threshold?
Well,
what does that mean?
I think this time of passing when the physical body leaves, that there's a sense in so many of us that there is something larger that's happening, and that we can be present to people and really not kind of go away. And that we can be there as they're dying, and that we've been working with people to say, what is it that you wish, you know, to be more conscious about those wishes. And to also, we've had several deaths where there have been like a mother or a parent dying and the children are left. And how can we hold this as a community for those children, for the children's peers, for all the other parents who are afraid of that kind of loss? And part of this, having this three-day vigil in our own community for people who have lost, people have come to us and said, I don't have the same fear.
So you feel that you are able to help your community, and now you're educating the rest of the community. What did you learn from your own experience that you think helps you do this?
Well, what happened for me when my husband passed away, he was in the hospital, and he had a heart failure, and we brought him home, and were able to find an agency who would help us, you know, a cremation society. We had him here for 3 days, and I experienced being able, and my daughter being able.
Now, you had him there after death, or you mean you took him home
after death?
Died?
No.
How did
died
you get
the
nerve to do that? I mean, you know, I was telling Heidi that her great-grandmother, we had her viewing, but that was in the 50s. People were still doing that. Amazingly,
right.
It hasn't been that long since people were not using organized funeral homes.
Right.
You have to be courageous to ask.
I mean, he was in the hospital. He went into this, you know, he lost consciousness, and we didn't know whether he was going to regain or not, and I said to my best friend, find me a mortuary who will let us take him home for a three-day vigil.
Had you seen that before?
No.
So you just...
I had heard about it.
You
but
had
I had
heard
never
about it,
seen it. And I just knew I wanted to be with him. I wanted to not leave him during those times and be with him and be able to say goodbye.
It was amazing. I remember I was 12 years old, and I would sneak up, and I was staying at my grandma's, and I would sneak up there and just sit and look at her body.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and my daughter, at first she didn't want to be in, you know, she was with us up to when he died, and then a number of us adults washed the body and brought him home in the casket and put him in this little house that he had actually built in our backyard. And at first Kirsten didn't want to go in there. And then she took some flowers from the garden and took them in. And then she would take a friend and go in. And then finally she said, I want to stay with him during the last night when he's there with my friends.
Wow.
So something happened in her soul that she was able to come closer and closer to her own saying goodbye by having the time.
And what about people who haven't been able to say goodbye now, both of you? What would you say to people? It's a new death. They went through the old way. They
right.
didn't get time to spend time with the body. Do you have any rituals, Marianne, that you might suggest to people that they might do now?
Well, lighting a candle for a person who has died is, a nice ritual act, and something that we actually gathered with friends to do on a weekly basis after our daughters died was to actually read to them, just because feeling that they are very close. They're just, you know, behind a thin veil that's separating us from them. And so we would actually read something spiritually uplifting.
As a group.
Them. Yes, we would take
right.
turns reading out loud.
Amazing. Isn't that interesting, Heidi? That's
I
not
love
one I haven't
that.
Heard. It's really
yeah.
These things that you're talking about make death less scary.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Another thing that happened, and I think this has been helpful. I've talked with a number of people. A man lost his partner on the 35 bridge collapse. Another lost his spouse in a car accident, and they said, well, what can I do, you know? And they weren't married, and so he couldn't be involved and that kind of thing. So I said, you know, you can picture that person in a loving moment in your mind, and you can send that love to that soul. And you can, when you're in nature, you can send the beauty of a flower, of a rose, to that person. And it means there's something you can do.
Right.
Not waiting for the bells and alarms to go off or the lightning to strike and say, here I am. There's something we, as simple a thing as lighting a candle or having a memory and saying, I send this to my beloved person. And there's something that happened for me in doing that. I was in the hospital, and I was feeling kind of agonized because I kept going back to the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And someone,
which many
gave,
of our audience do,
you know, so I'd keep trying to change it, you know, and this young person who was one of Kirsten's best friends gave me a picture of this golden being who came, and these two girls were going to go with him, and the mother still had some flowers to pick. And so every time I started to go into the accident memory, mm-hmm. I would transfer to this memory consciously. And something inside of me began to change. The trauma memory was replaced with a loving memory of destiny that I couldn't change, but that I could begin to feel embraced by.
I love that idea because I think a lot of our listeners do get kind of stuck in the trauma memories.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And retraining that brain. I mean, there's actually a chemical reaction that goes on in the brain, and trying to retrain that brain and to concentrate on another thing is a great idea. Well, what comes up for me with you both, too, is service, how helpful service is. You are really doing a lot of service in your community. Do you think service has helped you, Marianne?
Yes. This is Marianne. Another thing that I did was, it was 3 years after the accident, but I learned to play a new instrument. And the instrument is called a lyre. It's like a small harp-like instrument. And I also studied music for healing and transition. So now I am able to play music for people who are dying or who are grieving or during a wake at a home or in a hospital. So I can be of service to people in that way. And it is so much for me in honor of my daughter that I do that.
That is great. Well, you know, and not everyone wants to talk or, you know, do whatever. And being able to do music is a wonderful thing. Well, Linda, could you talk a little bit about your book, She Would Draw Flowers?
Yes. When I came home from the hospital, I found my daughter's poetry, and it was so helpful for me. I could, like, feel her soul. And so I decided I wanted all her friends to have that. So this friend of mine came over and got me. I was all, you know, in bad pieces, couldn't drive, and, you know, kind of recovering. But he would take me every night over to his place, and we put it on a computer, and we self-published it and had it ready in time for the memorial service and gave it out to 500 people.
Oh, wow.
And then people began saying, I need this book for my hospice. I need this book for my social work. I need this book for my father-in-law. I need this book for my friend. And so that's now 10,000 copies are out of She Would Draw Flowers. And there's, if people go to Google, they can find it on Amazon or Steiner Books. And I also have it on website. They can get it from me.
And what is your website?
It's beholdingthethreshold.org.
Okay.
And it's on that threshold.
And it's also
on
our website.
On that website. And this book has meant so much to so many young people because these poems would have been in her drawer if she had lived. So in a way, she gave this gift through me, you know, but it's really her gift. And it's also helped us have something to be able to serve the community with. And I've talked to hundreds of young people about poetry and about then all the things that come up in her poetry and the kind of just fresh inside of light that she really had. So that's been a gift, and it's been part of my healing, is being, I'm kind of an extrovert, so it's been helpful for me to have something. People say, well, why would you come here and talk to us, this young kid said, and I said, because then she's more alive for me.
Well, I was going to say,
when I see you,
so much,
she's alive.
She's doing so much in her death. I mean, her words are alive and living on, even though she's no longer here.
Yeah. Well, Marianne, you and Linda are doing so much for the world and to move it along, and we really appreciate your being on the show and all the wonderful work that you're doing. And if people want to know more about home death or more about your experiences, they can get a hold of you through beholdingthethreshold.org. And we are also, if you want to give us one of your favorite poems that your daughter wrote, we would be happy to put it up on our website. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you,
Gloria.
Thank you.
It's time for our break, and we want to thank Marianne and Linda for being on our show. And please stay tuned to our next segment when our next guest will be Diane Rooks, and we'll be talking about writing to heal the loss of a husband and a child. Stay tuned for more. You can access these archives for these shows on our blog, griefblog.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, my name is Beverly McManus. In 2003, my husband Steve died of cancer. It's been a tough journey, but it's been softened by being part of the Open to Hope Foundation caring community. This year, Abel Keough, whose wife died by suicide, and I have launched the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com website. We're working hard to have timely articles and create a dialogue of support. The important thing to know is that you are not alone. We'd like to share your grief journey with you and others who have lost their partners and invite you to help us get the word out about the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com site. You can also reach us by going to opentohope.com and scrolling down to the bottom of the page where all of the Foundation blog links can be viewed. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichhipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Hello, Drs. Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and our second topic today is writing to heal the loss of a husband and a child. And our second guest is Diane Rooks. As a master storyteller, Diane Rooks found healing after the death of a husband and son in the stories that she heard and told. On this show, Diane reveals how we can use our stories to repair even the most shattered lives. She is the author of Spinning Gold Out of Straw, How Stories Heal. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hi, Diane. It's great to have you on the show. I'm looking at your book right now, and I have to tell you, I don't know, maybe it's because yellow is one of my favorite colors and blue, but your book, Spinning Gold Out of Straw, when I pick it up, it's just like, wow.
Well,
it's like sunlight coming through. How stories heal. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into your book, could you talk a little bit about the death of your husband and then raising three kids on your own, right? And then your son's death. You've really been through a lot.
Well, my husband died back in 1981, so it has been a long time. But at that time, I did have three children. They were ages 16, 13, and 9. And I don't know that I really did handle his death in looking back as well as I could have. Everybody was trying to rush me through it and tell me, you've got to...
How old were you then, just for...
I was 38.
Yeah.
Wow, you were young.
And everybody was trying to help me get on with my life and take care of me, and I was in graduate school. I had gone back to school, so I was in school, and they just kept saying, you've got to keep everything as normal as possible for the kids. You don't want to upset the kids. And so I was trying so hard to do all of that. And one night I just had a meltdown, though, and I just said, look, you guys, you know, I wasn't cut out to be a single mom, and I'm not very good at it, and if you don't shape up, I'm out of here. And of course, I was kidding, but when I said that, it kind of got their attention, and it kind of opened a way for us to talk about what was going on and what and how we were dealing with it, which wasn't very, very good. And later that night, my son David, who was 16 at the time, he came in my room, and he said, Mom, I don't want you to be like Miss Green. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, my friend Jeff Green, his dad died several years ago, and Mrs. Green is just the most miserable person in the world. She makes Jeff's life miserable. She makes everybody she knows miserable. And I don't want you to be like Miss Green because it would be such a waste. And I thought, what wisdom from a 16-year-old? You don't even want to believe that they have any, but they do.
Wow,
and so
yeah.
I started looking at that and trying to see, you know, you don't want to just waste away, but and you can't just blunder your way through it. But that's what people were trying to get me to do. So I was trying to help the kids get on with their life and me get on with mine and be in graduate school and learn how to do the finances and things I had never done.
What were you studying, just for curiosity, in graduate school?
I was studying organizational psychology.
Uh-huh.
And coincidentally, right after my husband's death, I had a huge report that I had to give on team building or some such thing at a time when I couldn't even think of my name most days. And so how I even got through that report, or that it was an oral report or the class or anything, is amazing. But, you know, somehow you do it. Just keep putting one foot in front
right.
of the other, I guess.
Yeah, you just pull yourself together. What do they say? Fake it till you make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
Hear that wise son of yours, David, at age 29, died of an insect bite.
Yes, he did. And that was... And in many ways, an even harder experience for me, and also in many ways it forced me to go back and relook at some things that when my husband died that I had kind of pushed under the rug that I could no longer do. With the death of my son, none of the old answers and any of the things that people had said made sense anymore. So it was time to start really over and rebuild a foundation that
did
I could people, live.
Did your friends give you different messages when it was the death of David versus your husband? Because you said with your husband they were saying, hurry up, get on with your life, get back to normal. Were those the same messages when David died?
There was, some of that went on, and there were, of course, the ones, you know, God needed an angel in his choir and some of those really trite things that now when people, I hear people saying things like that, I just say, you know what, that really isn't helpful. I decided it was part of my mission to tell people when they said things that were not helpful. So with the son, it was probably, there were some different ones, but they were still not very helpful. And I know that people mean well, but they say the stupidest things, you know, and only the good die young, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it was his time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And that's not helpful.
It's not too bad sometimes to kind of keep your hate list of quotes.
Yeah, right. I have a lot of them. And people, of course, tell me when I do programs with people who are in grief, they tell me some of the things people say to them, and you just can't believe it. And yet, I look back and think, I probably said some of those same things before I was aware.
I would also think it would be frightening for people to hear that you can die from an insect bite.
Yeah, I think it is because, well, and a lot of people, you know, carry around the EpiPens now, and they know that, but you don't want to really admit that something that trivial can cause
it. I'm sure our audience would like to know a little bit more about where was he and what happened.
Well, he was at home by himself and working in the yard, and we actually never even knew what kind of insect it was because he just... His wife came home from work and found him dead, holding the cordless phone turned on. So it was fairly quick. And we assumed that it was heart because his father had died of a heart attack at a really young age. But then the autopsy came back, and it wasn't heart. His heart was fine. And so it took a long time to find his insect toxin level was elevated. But by that time, we didn't know if it was a bee or ants or spider or what. But neighbors had seen him out in the yard, so... most likely it was bees because it was in the fall and there were a lot of bees around. So,
Did he have children? So do you have grandchildren? Or
He did not have children. His wife was expecting their first child. She was only 2 months pregnant, and I didn't even know that they were expecting. So I thought at first when I first heard it, I thought, well, thank goodness there are no children involved so that won't. We won't have to deal with that.
Yeah, you always look for some little ray, right?
Right. And then later I thought, when I found out there were children, there was a child to be, it was like having a piece of him still. So
right.
I do have, David Michael is now 14.
Oh, and he was named after his father.
He is. And he's just, it's been an incredible miracle because they weren't really even trying to have children at that time. So to have a grandson now... it's been a real healing thing for me, and I tell him Daddy David stories all the time, and he, I know they work. This is what I tell people all the time. I know it works to tell stories of people because David Michael has never known his father on this earth. He died before David Michael was born, and yet he does have a real sense for who his daddy was because of all the stories I tell him. And when we're together, he'll say, tell me a Daddy David story. What was the worst thing my Daddy David ever did? Or,
I love it.
So he likes to know things like that, you know. What was the biggest trick he ever pulled on anybody? Because he knows that he was kind of a trickster and enjoyed doing that kind of thing. So
I love the questions he's asking you because he's really getting a real sense of who his father was.
Yeah, absolutely. And he never saw him. So... that's why I know that healing stories are so powerful for connecting us to people who have died.
And was it the death of your son and then going back to look at your husband? You said you had to revisit. Did you revisit that through stories? How did you get started with the stories?
Well, I think I had already gotten into storytelling, but I was doing it more just for entertainment and schools and places like that. So after the death of my son, I realized people were telling me stories about David. I knew people would send me stories. Other storytellers sent me stories that they thought would be healing, and I realized they were onto something. And I decided to go back to school and get a master's degree in storytelling and really explore how and why these stories were working.
Now, what school gave you a master's in storytelling? That's interesting. Is that?
I know it is. East Tennessee State University. I think there are actually others now that do or at least offer programs in storytelling or folklore or different kinds of things. But at that time, East Tennessee State University in Johnson City, Tennessee, was the only place that did that.
Well, there's that Story Corps that's going on right now,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Where people are telling their stories. Do you know where did the stories go for Story Corps? I can't. Did they go to the government or something? I can't remember.
Public radio is collecting them. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing. They're archiving them in some way.
And I sort of think that's what our show's a little bit about too, is people giving people an opportunity to tell their stories and hear the stories.
Yes, right. A lot of the 9/11 families I've worked with have done that, and they said it was incredibly healing just to tell their story in detail in StoryCorps.
I'm sure it was, and I think one of the things that I've learned about Story is I've continued to do it and continued to work with it after both the death of my husband and son, is that I heard the previous people on here talking about sometimes people get stuck in a particular, they like to tell the story, but they just get stuck in repeating it over and over and over. But the thing that I get people to do when I'm working with them is to kind of put it in a format of once upon a time, you know, this is what happened. And then one day this event occurred. But take it one step further to now here I am. What have I learned? What am I doing with what I've learned? It's that final step to look at what you've learned and what your experience has taught you and how you can share it with others that you find the healing, I think, or I have, and other people have told me that was, you know, key for them too. So
That's great. I want to talk about more about how our audience can begin to write stories if they haven't done it before, and what I think are really interesting are some of the questions and the idea of starting with once upon a time. Really wonderful. It's time for our break, and we're talking to master storyteller Diane Rooks, who found healing after the death of her husband and son. You can pick up the archives of this show on thegriefblog.com. You can download us on iTunes. And please visit us at our foundation. These are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart, Internet Radio, and thegriefblog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking with Diane Rooks, author of Spinning Gold Out of Straw, about writing to heal the loss of a husband and child. Welcome back to the show, Diane and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, we were talking about with Diane when we went to break about writing stories, and I love the idea of starting with Once Upon a Time because it takes us kind of out of into a different realm, doesn't it, where we can tell our story. In fact, you could even tell your story not true, that it happened to somebody else completely.
Right, right. In fact, sometimes I have people in workshops tell each other stories, and then the person that listens tells the other person's story to the group. And there's something about hearing your story from somebody else that adds another powerful dimension. And because they discover things in it sometimes that maybe you didn't even discover. So
Diane, do people usually start their stories after a loss with the way somebody died or on the day that they were born?
Well, lots of different ways. You know, in the beginning, they're just so hung up in the traumatic event that they just kind of repeat that over and over. And it's then later that they begin to look back at, well, you know, how were things before that? That's what makes what happened even more dramatic, I think, sometimes, is to hear what normal life was like. And then one day this event happened, and then, as I mentioned, taking it to the final level of, well, this is what I've learned from it and what I've... Not that I like it, not that I'll ever totally be okay with it, but this is, I have learned some things, and this is what they are and what I want to do with it. So I think in the beginning, you know, it just changes over time. And right afterwards, I think all they can really do is just repeat the event.
And, you know, for me, I mean, I learned about the depth of a sister's love. I didn't realize how deeply I loved until I had lost.
Exactly.
And, I mean, I think that's what I hear often from siblings and parents.
Now, how in your book you talk about, I would, by the way, I'd highly recommend this book if you want to write your stories to heal. It's really wonderful. It's very full of quotes, and it's very full of ideas about how stories can render meaning from chaos. And I wanted to just pick a couple of things in here, like how do stories connect us with the universe?
Well, I think when somebody tells their story, when I tell the story about my son, which I called Infinite Resource and Sagacity because it was a story, a Kipling story, How the Whale Got His Throat, that David liked a lot when he was a kid. And there was a little, a man in there, a man of infinite resource and sagacity. And he loved those words. So the story that I tell about David, you know, I've named it that. But when people hear my story, it gives them permission to tell theirs and to open up and say what they need to say. So... to hear one story makes you realize, well, I'm not so crazy either. And so you realize that out there, there's a lot of people that you can connect to that really do understand and can help you work through your stories and your events.
Yeah, I think that's what came up for me is what the Compassionate Friends does when we do our group in Palo Alto. And Palo Alto here, I'm involved with the group, and what it really does is it does connect us with the universe, doesn't it?
When
two people hear our story, we begin, it kind of goes out there. And also, I think our show, I feel like it connects us with the Internet, with a huge
further
universe.
Out, yeah.
Amazing. How about transforming the pain? How does stories help us do that?
Well, I think as we tell it, if we help somebody else by telling it, then that you think, well, maybe what I'm going through is worth it. And then also the stories of like the people that were on there before, what they did with their pain and converted it into something that was helping other people. And the pain never goes away, as you know, but it transforms it into something that you can live with and deal with. And the things that you've mentioned so far, connecting us with the universe and transforming our pain, or each one of those is a chapter in the book. When I started writing it, I didn't even know how to organize it, but as I interviewed people and talked to them about how stories heal them, I came up with these 12 reasons why stories heal, and eventually decided to let each of these reasons be a chapter. So each chapter is organized around that particular reason and with examples of how that particular reason helped other people. And then in the last one is that stories offer hope, because that is ultimately what all of these stories do, is that they offer hope to people that they can survive. Not that they'll ever get their child or their husband back, but that they can survive just knowing that somebody else did and that somebody else lived through it and that they are continuing and making something of their life gives people hope. Well, maybe I can too. So I think each of these reasons that what became important because they were reasons that people gave that stories had healed them.
Now, can you talk a little bit about how they help you restore the future? I thought that was really an interesting chapter.
So many people say at the death of a child or any loved one, you know, my future's gone. I don't have a future. And because the future that you planned and that you envisioned has gone forever. So through telling these stories gradually, working through the grief and the pain can restore the happiness and the joy that you once had. And you can't get there until you get through the pain. I know that personally, because I don't think I really did that as well, as I mentioned, with my husband as I did later with my son's death. But really,
if you'd had the story idea with his death, with your husband's death, do you think that would have helped you? What would have helped you?
I think it would have. I just didn't have the knowledge about stories when he died that I did later. I hadn't gotten into that part of my life yet. And so I didn't. Later, actually, one of my daughters said to me, I just can't remember much about Dad. So I started going back and telling her stories of things that, crazy things that he did. You know, the day he took our rabbit for a walk on a leash and things like that. I mean, just, you know, and then she remembered it. And then that would help her remember something else about him. And then my other daughter said, oh, yeah, that reminds me. So that's the other great thing about stories, is that they prompt you to remember other things.
Images. And if you can't remember, I think bringing out old picture books can trigger your memory with stories.
I think that's true, and that they're really good triggers, or just something that they owned, or something they gave you, or something, you know, just to try to remember and tell a story about that. Then it broadens the image and the memory so much when you can do that.
I really think there's a lot of biology connected with this. I think retraining the brain to think in different ways is an amazing idea. As far as restoring the future, I was thinking you can rewrite you can write the story of I am now a happy person, you know, even though you're not. How one day, 5 years down, you know, how many years down the road, this is what happened to me, and I became really happy, and I became, you know, an astronaut. Or, you know, you can do anything
right.
You want to do.
That's right. In fact, I tell people that, you know, how your story ends really is up to you. And you can envision it even at a time when maybe you don't have any, you've lost hope, or to begin to think about, well, what could be some possibilities? What could be some new directions,
get out of bed and be able to mash my socks again.
That's right. I mean, it starts small, but eventually you can see some possibilities that you never thought about. And if you think, well, yeah, there could be some possibilities down the road, or some opportunities that I never dreamed of. This could take, and it does take you on roads that you never dreamed of, that's for sure, and paths and people to meet and experiences that you wouldn't have ever gone on if you hadn't have been down that path to begin with.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for being on the show, and your book, Spinning Gold Out of Straw, How Stories Heal, I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. It's on our website. Now, do you have a website people can go to?
I do. It's storyjourney.com.
All right, and we wish all of our audience luck in thinking about their stories and writing their stories. Thank you, Diane, for being on our show.
Thank you.
It's been delightful.
Thanks, Diane.
Bye-bye. It's
time to close our show, and I want to thank our guest, Diane Rooks. Please stay tuned again next week when our topic will be recovering from a traumatic event, and our guest will be Richard Beck, adjunct professor at Fordham University, and Stephanie Frog, professional crime victim services consultant. This show is archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Please stay again, tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley, Marianne, Linda, and Diane. Thanks for helping people heal and find hope again after loss.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.